Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. You know, I love talking to authors because they have the courage to take their thoughts, their stories, and put it down in a book and share it with the many, ultimately changing their legacy and their destiny in the process. And obviously helping other people get to where they want to go, right? When you write a book, you complete the hero's journey. So that's why I'm excited to talk to our next guest. He helps small businesses like I do. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, most likely you're an entrepreneur looking to start or grow a business. And I recommend you do write a book out there. If you're looking to write a book, check out dreamstarterspublishing.com. We can help you out with wherever you're at in the process. And if you have a book that's already done, you want to generate leads with it, check out bookmarketingcrm.com. Now, entrepreneurship, to me, it's exciting. But it's also like sometimes you're in a jungle, sometimes you're in a desert. And one of the questions we always come across is, all right, whenever I create this service, what do I price it, right? How do I price it? And that's why our next guest wrote a book called Pricing Strategies for Small Business. And we have the author today, Andrew Gregson. Thanks so much for being here, man.
My pleasure. You grasped the concept. It's a legacy project for me.
Well, this probably created your identity, right? All of a sudden, people know you as the pricing guy. So what made you want to write it? And can you give us a quick little background on where you come from and how you ended up here?
Okay. Well, first of all, the motivation for all of this came from me doing a lot of consulting work. And I realized after about 80 assignments that everybody was suffering, anybody that had financial problems, and that's most of us in business, not making the profit that we'd like to, or maybe not making any, all were doing the same thing. First of all, they price it like everybody else. They were busy counting all the paper clips and trying to keep down their costs, and they were trying to drive their sales forward. And I realized at some point that, wait a minute, this is a three-legged stool. You've got sales, controlling of your costs, but the biggest tool available to you is actually pricing. Because if you make, it's a very simple number to do, if you take a standard profit and loss statement, P&L, and add 5% to the to your prices without changing anything else, you will, for most businesses that have a 5 to 10% bottom line, you will increase your profit on the bottom line by over 25%. It's a startling number when you start doing things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's the power of pricing that's way, way more important to me than the actual numbers per se. And every time that I give a talk on pricing, and I give a lot, I come up and I say, I cannot tell you how much to charge for this item, your sale. I cannot tell you that. But I will give you the tool that will allow you to make a rational decision about your business and how you're going to get there. Because it's going to change. And, you know, I wrote the first book in 2008 on pricing strategies, and there are, I think, 13 of them strategies in there. And after a while, if you used one of them, it's going to wear out. It's just like, you know, truck tires, they wear out. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
So you have to find another one, and then you have to find another one. And the reason that a lot of that happens is that you're with a in some instances, your competitors can follow you. So they're going to catch up to you eventually. There was one in the news just a few weeks ago, The Body Shop, which entered the market years ago with their claim that nothing was tested on animals, right? They just exploded onto the marketplace. Well, then it took them about 20 years, but everybody followed them and said, none of our stuff's tested on animals right either. And suddenly The Body Shop just had no reason to exist. The WIFM, why should I buy from you, disappeared. So anyway, that's the legacy part of this, is to teach people that, in fact, there are three legs.
Wow.
The most powerful one is pricing, getting it right. If you do it right, you can, in your marketplace, you can harvest, is probably the wrong word, but let's say use that for the moment. You can harvest clientele in the bottom end of the market, the mid-market and the top end of the market. Whereas I can tell you, being an entrepreneur myself, that typically you set the price and the people at the bottom say, well, no, that's too much. I don't want to do that. The people at the top end walk away because you're not offering enough. And it's a take it or leave it proposition. And no one likes take it or leave it. They want to see an option.
Yeah.
So that's what I teach.
Wow. And by the way, you just bring up a very good point. I had to take it or leave it for a long time because it was simple for me to, number one, do and communicate, but also teach to my sales force. Right. And so I thought that was the way to go. You got to take it or leave it. But no, I think people want that option. Right. And we're starting to see it. So real quick, whenever it comes to pricing a new service, most of my clients, they have a service-based business. And the way I see it, maybe I'm on something or maybe I'm wrong, but when it comes to their initial price, they will come up with that price based off of, all right, what's it worth? You know, what I need, what do I need to get out of this? Let's start there. What's my competitors doing? And since I'm not tried and tested just yet, let's make it a little bit more of a discount. And so let's start with that price and then work our way up. I think that's where people begin. And I noticed that I'm kind of victim to that mentality too. Am I on to something with that?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I delivered a lecture at the university in Cape Breton. This is quite a few years ago, based on the first book I published. And there were about 300 people there. And I started talking about mistakes done in pricing. And some wag in the back stuck his hand up and said, "How do you know all of this?" And I said, "It's really simple. I have made every mistake in the book."
Yeah. School of Hard Knocks taught you. That's why you know your shit. Yeah.
I know it doesn't work. Now, here's the interesting bit. When I was chatting with someone, my business partner at the time, and I said, "You know, we're going on our way to have a look at this client." And I said, "I bet you dollars to donuts they have a pricing problem." I started to describe how I knew this. And he said, "You should write a book about it." I decided I should have a look first at who else had written books about this. First of all, no one in Canada. I'm the only one. In the US, 10 times the marketplace, 4 people have written stuff about pricing. Astonishing to me. And it isn't worked on by many of the consultants. There's software out there that supposedly does what you think it's going to do, but it doesn't. The ones I've looked at harvest information off the internet saying what the price is for your book or your service or your, right? If you publish the prices, they'll put it back to you, mashed up and made into a statistician's, here you go. Here's the lump sum. And everybody then follows the same path. And the way I describe that to most people that I talk to in their businesses is that in small business, the failure rate is 96% in the first 5 years. So if all of your customers are pricing at a dollar and you price at a dollar, what are the chances of you not making it, being one of the 96% of the lemmings who go over the cliff? Yeah, it's really high. So find your own one. But better than that, my hobby horse is value pricing. Now, hang on. I'm going to answer one of your questions you asked me earlier, you know, about me, my background, et cetera. I've started 5 businesses. There were service businesses, buy-sell businesses, were selling other people's labor, selling other people's stuff. I owned a hardware store. I owned a rental business. So I understand what it's like to be in the trenches and have to do all of this stuff. But I also am extremely well-educated. I have a master's degree in economics from the London School of Economics, which is, when I took it, it was the number 3 university on the planet. It's an extremely good education. So I bring all of that to bear. You know, I can understand why people make decisions and why they phrase it in such ways. And it was a second nature for me to go and research and find out what was out there. In fact, even the Harvard Business Review, very revered, had almost nothing. I think 2 articles on it, and both of them were virtually unreadable. So how's a guy they're probably just fine for someone who is working in a pricing department at Walmart or at with Steve Jobs or with some IBM. But how does that work for the guy who has a rental business?
Yeah.
How does that work for a guy who has a hardware business? You don't know. So I made the two books. There's Pricing Strategies for Small Business and then The Dark Art of Pricing, which is written 10 years after that, which is a much grittier book. They were written with the audience in mind that they're going to apply this stuff tomorrow or this afternoon.
It's great.
It's a kind of how-to book. So anyway, my hobby horse is value pricing. So when I've just completed just a couple of weeks ago a session with, I think there were eight people in the group. It was peer mentoring. So I guide them through what they're trying to do. They all wanted to know more about their pricing, which is absolutely fine. But where we started was, why should I buy from you? And they couldn't answer the question in the beginning. None of them could. By the time we'd finished, they all had a really crystal clear idea of what it is that they were offering and what the value was to the customer. There we can begin. Because once you've established what it is that you offer, and I got them all to create 35 things that they had that they felt that they offered that were of value to Mike. Okay, so we took that 35 and said, okay, this is your premium price product. This is all the stuff that you offer. Now, when we want to move down the market a little bit and capture the middle of the market, we're going to lose some stuff here that costs you money to do. So you can, in fact, reduce the price, but you're not discounting because you're cutting costs. Your margins remain the same. And then to get down at the bottom end of the market, we'll remove more stuff yet. So you're still not discounting, but you're offering something of lesser value to the customer because it matches their wallet better. Mm. Now, this happened to me when I had my reno business. I remember going into this lady's house who wanted a bathroom reno. I had just come back from a course in Chicago about pricing, estimating renos. And I sat down with them after I'd gone into the bathroom and I'd measured up and done, here's my book. It's still steaming because it's so fresh off the presses. And I sat down and I worked it all out. And I said, okay, Mike, it's going to be $5,000. And this, their names were Mr. and Mrs. Wheeler. And they looked at me with this blank stare. And I said, okay, this is a little bit more than you were thinking of spending, wasn't it? And they said, yes. How much did you think you were going to spend? $4,000. Mind you, this is a long time ago, I remember. So, okay, that's not a problem. Because I put in a very expensive pedestal sink. We don't have to have that. There are much more economical options for this. We'll change it to this. And I put in a very expensive beveled mirror for you because I thought you'd like it. We don't have to have that. So by the time I took out stuff that cost me money, we were down to $4,000. And I left with the deposit and the contract signed that night. Now, the alternate way of doing it, Mike, and we all know this because we've all done it, and I did it before I took the course, is somebody would say, I can't afford $5,000, I'll give you $4,000. And I would say, okay.
Yep.
Where did that grand come from? My wallet.
Right? Yes.
My wallet.
Yes.
So I didn't do that. And they were happy, and we did a nice job. So it's that kind of story that I keep putting out to people and say, just get it into three. Four is too many. Two is uncomfortable. One is jamming it down their throat. It's a take it or leave it proposition. So we need all three. And that comes, it's called the Goldilocks proposition. And it is a well-known factor in psychology. Just look it up at any time. There's loads of articles on it. It's sometimes called the too much choice. It's the quandary of having too much choice. So there's another example.
Decision fatigue. Is that what you're saying?
This
decision fatigue, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's too many choices. You don't make a choice. You walk away. Can't do it. And there was an example not 10 years ago. This company was selling jam. And they are jelly, if you like, and the marketing company convinced a grocery store to put their jam, their jellies, on the end caps in the grocery store. So when you go around the grocery store, it's the ones at the very end. They get very, very high traffic. They sell a lot of stuff on those end caps. So they're prime real estate. So they put one load of them up there with every variety of jam and jelly that they had and saying 10% off. The other one, a little bit further down, had three varieties on it and no discount. And the one with the three varieties sold better.
Wow.
Because it was just too much choice. And yeah, it's just simple.
So when you, all right, now, yeah. And this will help me out and probably many people who listen, when you present that, is it, yeah. Hey, before we get started, we offer many options. So whenever I present you the time frame and the price, just so you know, there's options. Do you say that up front or do you save that for the end?
For the end.
Okay.
What I encourage people to do, you do never, ever, ever say the price up front because you've just told them that the only thing that's important is the price. So why would they listen to the rest of it? What you really want to do is take that list of your 35 things that you're offering and go through them one after the other. Phrasing it, and you will know how to do that. Here's what I'm offering to you. Here's the benefit to you. And phrase them all in those ways, right? It's fab. Feature advantage benefit. It's old school salesmanship, but it works.
Yeah.
You get to the end of the list and then you say the price. And they say, just like with the bathroom reno, that's a bit more money than I can afford. You have achieved two things right away. You have told them everything that you could possibly do for them, which is fabulous. Even if they don't buy and they know about it, then they might tell someone this afternoon. Secondly, you found out what their budget is. And how tough is that to do anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah. In all the sales books, it says, if you can get the customer to open first and tell you what the budget is, you've got it made. Well, we're all smarter than that now. We don't give out what our budget is anymore because we know that if we say it's $500 is my budget, the price is $505. So we don't do that. So we're reluctant to tell. Now, by presenting them something and say, well, that's a bit more money than I can afford, not a problem. We can lose this, we can lose this, we can lose this, and we can lose this, and we get it down to where it's affordable for you.
Beautiful.
And it works.
Beautiful.
I did this right in the middle of COVID when we couldn't go and talk to people in person. I did this same talk to nearly 30 women entrepreneurs in a town close to me. And at the end of it, when the program ended and COVID had ended by then, we had a little celebratory dinner. And of course, I'd never met any of these people except like this, like I'm meeting you. And I walked into the room and the lady who was the convener or the organizer of the event looked over, saw me and said, "There's Andrew." And I had a room full of women come running over to me saying, "It works, it works, it works." That was one of the most gratifying things that's ever happened to my life.
Yeah, I'd say so. But yeah. Just hearing women coming to you saying it works. What works?
That was fabulous. And you know, in the end, and the reason I'm very happy to do this for you, Mike, is that most entrepreneurs struggle with it. They don't know how to get past that problem of following the lemmings over the cliff. And they end up not making the money that they could or should for what they're offering. And they end up discounting. And, you know, when you discount, then you telling people you're not really worth very much. You know?
Yeah.
Now, to the practicalities of it, the other big lesson that I've been teaching people, when you're trying to figure out what the actual number has to look like, we start with the break-even number. So when you do a break-even calculation, and I teach financial stuff too, right? Not just pricing. So this is the second nature to me. You start with the break-even. What do you have to sell at what price every single month in order to get to zero. So you've paid all your costs.
Yeah.
Then add something in for you. And then added something in for profit. Now, if you're uncertain about what the numbers should look like in terms of your costs, particularly for people who are starting out, in Canada at least, when people submit their business income tax, they have to submit it with an NAICS number, North American Industry Standards number on it. And that classifies the business what it is. So Stats Canada harvests that information and puts it out for free on the internet. So you can look at it by industry, by your NAICS number, by your province, and see where you stand. Wow. So if you look down and you say, well, you know, the cost should be this percentage of my sales. This is what I should be paying for rent. This is what I should be paying for employees. This is where my margins should be. It gives you a really good solid grounding for making those assumptions where you don't have enough information. So it's a great tool. So you build it as a zero function first and then build on top of that. And then, of course, you have to look at your marketplace. What are other people doing? What are they offering? How am I going to be different? But at that point, you've narrowed down the places where you can get it wrong and end up in problems. You've narrowed it down to this much instead of having be a mile wide. And so it's easier to correct. Now, having said all of this, the benefits of my particular approach in all of this are that, first of all, I said one of them already, you get to know your client very well because they told you their budget. By giving them choices, you build trust with the client, right? You're not jamming it down their throat. You say, that's not a problem. I can help you with here. You build trust. Thirdly, you are going to get instant, valuable feedback on how to adjust your prices. Are you too high, too low? That you don't get most of the time. Most of the time we get out there and we sell the stuff. We don't really know why it sold or didn't sell. And we come back and make a bunch of assumptions that may or may not be correct. But by this approach, you get to know why it is you didn't sell it.
Yeah.
I don't see any value in offering Saturday parking. It means nothing to anybody I've talked to. Okay, fine. We take it off the list. See where I'm going with all of this?
Yeah, well, you're making me think of that. I think it all begins with the target audience too, the target customer, the perfect customer. So we interviewed a guy, I guess it was about maybe 2-3 months ago, and he talked about pricing psychology. And he says, and I'm assuming you've come across this too, that the companies like Prada, and whether it's Rolex or the ones that are, I think, very much in the handbag world, or very luxurious items.
High-end stuff.
They have certain things in their store that they know they're not going to sell, right? It could be a $25,000 purse. But they put that there because right next to it is a $3,000 purse. So somebody's going to look at that and say, oh my God, a $25,000 purse. I can't afford that. I'd love to be able to afford that. That's the most amazing thing. But look at this purse. It looks pretty close. I'll pay for the $3,000. And maybe it's not $3,000 to $25,000, but there's something that's happening in the brain that says, that's amazing, but I can't afford that. Let me go to the next tier down, and I can't afford that. What is happening there?
Yeah. That's absolutely brilliant. A great observation. So I, in offering three choices, you give them the opportunity to make their own decision. And as I said, you get instant feedback, right? Which one is selling? What do they hit on? I don't see any value in that, but this one interests me. Great. Now you're doing better at that point than 95% of your competitors. Oh yeah, 95.
Wow. It's truly amazing.
It does. It really does work. I've been doing this since 2008 with people. It works. It works every time. And it doesn't matter whether you're selling a product or a service.
So basically the principles do match up, right? I was going to ask you, is there a difference between a product and a service? Service to me, I've always thought, is based off of a personal brand. And I guess I'm in certain worlds that personal branding matters, but are you saying that a service and a product, pretty much the laws of pricing, they correlate to each other? Is that right?
Yes, they do. That's right.
Very nice. Okay.
Being simple about it. Yeah.
And so, when it comes to, let's just say, the pricing itself, the number, I'm looking through your book, and I love how you put this in the very beginning. You're talking about, you know, how the 99 cent stores and how everything with a 99 actually sells more than if it was a dollar, even though it's a penny.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you get this from something that happened in 1883. So can you give us a quick little rundown on maybe how important it is, what the number is? So it's rather than $500 a month, it's $4.99. And where did that come from?
Well, the original story, and I have a PowerPoint presentation that I use for this, shows a picture of a cash register. Because you're in all the, think about how all the cowboy movies work, right? Guy goes into the store and they pay for it, and it's in coins usually, sometimes paper money. And the guy goes to the till, which isn't a till, it's just a box with the money in it.
Yeah.
And he counts out. And then he goes to his ledger, handwritten with a pencil, right? Lick the end. Write in the number, right? So how do you know that the number is accurate? So when cash registers were invented, it did two things. One, it told you how much money was going in so that at the end of the day, you could run a tape that said, I sold $497 worth of stuff today. With my float, there should be this much cash in there. So you can, it gives you a better read on what you're doing. It's more accurate. And you can see if your employees are stealing from you. Second thing is, in order to access the change, you have to press the button where the bell goes off. So you could be working in the stockroom or working in the back doing, and you hear the bell go, it was a sale. But if the price is a buck, silver dollars, here's my silver dollar, what's to stop the employee from just pocketing it? Nothing. If it's 99 cents, they have to get change. You have to ring the bell.
This is where it comes from. I never knew that. I'm reading through it. I'm like, please tell me about this story. This is fascinating.
Yeah. So it's simple stuff, but it works. And remember, you know, right now we wouldn't worry about a penny at all. And I get that. But a penny in those days is worth a lot of money, right? You might be paying a 10 cents for a beer. Yeah. Okay. So the penny is worth a lot of money.
Ooh. All right. Yeah. So did they notice anything when they did that 99 cents? I mean, psychologically, people were like, wow, it's not that much money if it ends in 99. There is something that's going on in their brain as they make that transaction. Am I right?
That's true. That's true. And it's, I don't understand the psychology of it because I'm not a psychologist, but as soon as it flips over, $4.99 becomes $5. The $5 is way more expensive. That's
it's
where
that
our brains
first number.
Work.
That's what they. Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's the. Yeah. It's a significant change from go from four to five, right? It has nothing to do with really the 99, but it's the jump that's the number beforehand. Good point.
Yep. Now, have you ever shopped at Walmart?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't. None of their prices end in 99.
98, isn't it?
No, 67, 23, 42.
Oh, okay. I haven't been there.
They have a completely different pricing strategy that is driven by the numbers. They are a very data-driven company. And they don't play around with it. Nothing ends in 99 because they know that people are used to seeing that and are kind of ignoring it. But when they see odd prices, 23, to, I can explain it, but it'd take too long. But when they see it end in really odd numbers like that, they think they're getting a better deal. You must be trying to get me the best deal I can because it ends in 37 cents.
Wow.
I know. Interesting psychology, isn't it?
So when cents are, I guess that makes a lot of, I mean, pun intended, it makes a lot of sense. All right. So, so you're telling me that if you have cents as a part of your product, that it actually confuses them, not confuses, but it makes it look like an advantage that it doesn't end in 99 cents.
Yes. They've used what is common out there to end in 99 cents, and they've turned it back on itself and made it an advantage for Walmart. It's really brilliant.
Wow. Because it does look like it's a discount. I have a store on Shopify, and I remember somebody making a comment like, why? By the way, I didn't even think about it. I just put the product up. I put the profit margins got to be, and then done, right? But somebody said, why does it end? And I think it was 17 cents. And I was like, I don't know. I'm just, that's it. But I could always say now, oh, well, studies show that it looks like it's a discount. Ah, that's so good, man.
I did my best to get the price as low as I possibly could. It feeds into the mantra that Walmart is teaching us all the time. You know, they have the lowest prices. Whether that's true or not, that's not part of it. We just believe that.
That's a huge takeaway. I never realized that. Okay, so there's people out there who are listening. A lot of my clients, they have service-based businesses.
Yep.
A couple key takeaways that I've written down here, basically. When it comes to offering a service, make sure you have options available, right?
Yes.
And that's never presented in the beginning, but usually at the end. I would assume you don't even relay that on your website anywhere. You just have, hey, let's meet. I have some solutions, right? So it's kind of, you're not being as clear as the sales pitch because you want them to actually meet with you so you can educate them on everything.
Yes.
And then obviously the break-even aspect. Make sure that when you put together the pricing, have the break-even in place, then you add yourself in, then you have your profit, and that might be ground zero starting points.
Yes. There's a piece missing though, Mike. And we refer to that as the elevator pitch, which should be on your website or any of your information, including business cards, and should be the first thing out of your mouth when somebody says, well, what do you do? And a lot of people have really awful elevator pitches that don't mean anything. So here, I'll give you an example. When I was working for a Chicago-based consultancy, I would arrive, say Sunday night, ready to do my thing on Monday morning, go to the hotel room. And in those days, because this is a while ago, we had yellow pages. They were in all of the hotel rooms. And I'd go to the yellow pages and flip through it until I found my client that I was going to see tomorrow morning. And I would, don't tell anybody, but I used to rip the pages out that had my client on it. And I'd take them with me the next day. And I'd sit there in front of the client and say, okay, Mike, why should I buy from you? And he said, well, you know, we offer, great service. Great, no problem. So I opened up my folder and I got his yellow pages. And of course, all of his competitors are on the same page. And it's, oh, wow, they all say they offer great service. Oh, well, you know, we offer, free parking or, you know, something. Oh, they all offer that the same. Well, by the time I ground on this poor guy for, you know, half an hour, finally would say, well, we have lower prices. I said, okay, now do we understand why it is you're having financial problems?
He cannot clearly articulate the value add. And
that's right.
It's low-hanging fruit to say price. That's it.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. So the elevator pitch, obviously, is you want that to be as short as you possibly can and as vivid as you possibly can make it so that someone says, well, tell me more. And then you go into the list of 35 and they say, no, we'll go to this one. We'll go to this one. And it works. Where is it going to go with this? I'll come back to it in a minute.
The elevator pitch being very clean, simple, and sexy.
And
it's got to be somewhat sexy, am I right?
Yeah. Well, the one that is in all the business books, and you will have read lots of them by now, I know, and well, a lot of people out there have read them. And one of the ones in the older books, at least, was the Domino's Pizza. And their selling proposition, right?
Yeah.
Which was...
Yeah. Wait. I remember hearing this story. I haven't had Domino's in years, but
I know
it was a delivery within 15 minutes or something, right? Or 30 minutes.
Hot and tasty pizza delivered to your door in 20 minutes or it's free.
There it is.
Right? So parse it. It's hot and tasty pizza. What does that give you in your mind?
Oh man, it makes you think. You're all of a sudden your tongue
you start to
even
salivate.
Me just thinking about it. I'm craving pizza. Just so you know, I'm thinking about it.
And the alternative, you don't want anything that's cold. And last year's, you know, hot and tasty sounds great. Delivered to your door. Well, this is unusual because when Domino's started all of this, they had very few people actually delivered. A couple of mom and pops did, but none of the chains delivered. Delivered to your door. Cool. So I'm watching the game. I don't want to give up just because I want a pizza. I've had a beer. Maybe that's not such a bright idea for me to be driving, but it'd take me 20 minutes to get there and pick it up and 20 minutes to get back. I've lost a whole quarter of the game. So it's not appealing. Hot and tasty pizza delivered to your door in 20 minutes. Well, I can sit here and have another beer. That is all for the benefit of the customer. Or it's free was to keep out the competitors because they all said, oh, you're going to lose money on this. And true to form, they did in the first little while they figured out the logistics of it. And then it took off. And Domino's went from being just a few stores here and there scattered all over the place to being the dominant pizza place in America and Canada with hundreds of stores.
Wow.
Hundreds. Yeah.
So you're telling me that this incredible marketing strategy was a loss leader, technically to boost their name, to get enough sales in, to actually grow their workforce, to increase their systems and processes. And once it was figured out, they had market share.
It wasn't deliberately set up to be a market leader at all. It was meant to make money out of the gate, but they hadn't figured out all the logistics of it, how to get it to someone's door, and it's still hot. Right? Because you have to have special boxes for that. They didn't figure that out. Does the owner of the store jump in his car and deliver it over to Mike's house? What if he's too far away? What if it's a 25-minute journey to get there? All those things, all those little, it's always the devil in the details, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was meant to make money out of the gate, and it took a little while, but it did. And it made him a lot of money.
Oh.
Yeah. But the reason I was telling you about this is that is the elevator pitch. And you want something that is really vivid, puts a picture in the guy's mind immediately. Right? And then that's the hot and tasty. Delivered to your door. Then that's a benefit to you. Why is it a benefit? Well, I don't have to drive anywhere. I can stay and watch the game. And then the last bit, to keep out the competition. And if you can do any of those, if you can figure out something as powerful as that, you've got it made, because most people don't. And all you have to do is look on their websites and see how awful they are. Oh, we've got great service. Oh, yeah, we do this. Oh, and it could be as simple as this, by the way, Mike. A number of years ago, I was educating this guy. He was going to start an electrical company. And I went around the room and I said to everybody, why should I buy from you? And I came to this guy and he says, because I'll answer the phone. And I said, I don't get it. What do you mean? He says, I've already phoned all of my potential competitors in town and none of them answered the phone. They all went to voicemail. I will simply answer the phone. This is brilliant. I know you're laughing, and it sounds so stupid, but it's true. And when I had to have my carpets cleaned, I phoned three companies all went to voicemail. The fourth one answered, they got the job.
Yeah.
I want to talk to a human being.
And by the way, you're kind of leaning in on something that people value. That's it, right? Hot and ready. We'll answer your phone. Shit, that's all I want you to do, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So it has to be simple and understandable without much brain power to actually get behind it and understand it. That's good.
Simplicity works. I love simple, elegant solutions. And what I've just told you is one of those.
Man, is that good.
Yeah. Wow. I'll give you one other tidbit of information. There's a fellow named Bob Thompson who wrote a book in, I think, 2002 on customer retention. And I'll send you the the name of it after we're done, like by email, because I don't remember it at the moment. And it was interesting because what he did is he would go to his clients and give me the list of the people who no longer buy from you. And he'd go and interview them and say, why don't you buy from Mike any longer? And he got all these answers back, and then he and his team collated those. Then they went back to the owner of the business and they asked them the same questions, and they collated all their responses there. And then they put them into a big table. And it was very interesting because I'm trying to recall the numbers now, but about 40% of the time, customers said they didn't want to, or they walked away from the client, or that provider, the vendor, because they didn't have good customer service. So what is good customer service? Answering the phone, dealing with something when they have a problem, right? Late delivery, or, you know, all those kinds of things that happen to in normal business. They walked away because of that. The owner of the business said, no, that's only about 5 or 10%. It's not worth worrying about. So they went to quality of service, quality of delivery. You promise me that you're going to produce this fabulous piece of furniture and it isn't. Similar numbers, about 40% of the time. Customers didn't go back because the quality was not as promised. Customer, the business owner, it's only about 15% of the time. It's nothing we really worry about. And then, of course, there's the elephant in the room, pricing. Customers walked about 15% of the time because their pricing was wrong. And for the business owner, it's, oh, that's over 50% of the time. I'm losing customers because my price is too high. And yeah, utterly, utterly wrong. And if you owned a business like that, where would you focus your time and effort?
Oh, my God. The moment I would hear those numbers, it's got to be focused on customer service, right? That's yes. All you would do. It's
easiest place to change it, and then focus on getting a quality job out the door so that you have a reputation for being, here is the mantra, here's the holy grail. My God, Mike is so expensive, but he's the best.
Yes. Which was a transition we made, which was exactly a transition we made.
Yeah. When you can get to that place, you are driving the bus, not someone else.
Last question I have for you is, many people that I know have these one-off products, yeah, and they also have the recurring model. All right. So when you're, yes, talking about recurring revenue, pricing wise, is there anything you could share with us? Because even in my own company, we have many solutions now. And so I've always thought, well, people can buy a la carte and they just add it in, and then they pay monthly, but maybe it's hitting at a different time than another thing that they've already bought. So would you rather just have it in one bulk pricing? And does that matter? Do people care about that? Like, is there anything you can share to reoccurring models that might be valuable within this book?
When it comes to product, recurring stuff is gold, because that's, you know, people come in, they buy the same thing each time. Yeah. And Procter & Gamble have this all figured out, and have had it all figured out for decades. So you come in and you buy your detergent, and beside it on the shelf is another one that they also make that might be smell differently, or, you know, promises something else, but in fact, it's identical inside. And it is actually slightly different pricing. That's the way they've always done it. And it works extremely well, extremely well. And when you have somebody who's coming in and buying, there's always the opportunity for an add-on sale. We all know that that's the great part. Guy comes in and buys a suit, he should be buying a tie. He should be buying the shirt. He should be buying the trousers that go with it. And by the way, you'd look better with a nicer looking belt, right? And you build the sale up accordingly. But you've got to get them in the store. So the importance of Bob Thompson's book is to get customers coming back again and again and again and again. That's your low-hanging fruit. And to lose them is expensive.
Bingo.
Not as expensive as it used to be, but it is expensive. Now, the other model, of course, is a one-off sale. They're tough. And you don't get the same benefits from them. But on the other hand, if that is the way it works, and that's your target is a one-off sale, I would be collecting as much information on the client as you possibly can. Because tomorrow you might have a really bright idea and say, gee whiz, I could have this another product go really well with that. But if you don't know who they are, who's been buying, you're hooped. I did an experiment, must be 15 years ago, I guess now. I went down the main street of the town that I live in and interviewed all the people who had coffee shops and restaurants. I said, how many of you actually collect information, you know, even if it's just an email address so you can, or a Twitter address or something, anything so that you can say, by the way, we've got this on sale, or we've got this new product coming in. None of them did. Couldn't be bothered. Dumb. Because there's so many opportunities. And remember, every time you make contact with a customer, whether they buy or not, you've made contact and they like that. Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember those guys. I remember that product. I bought that. That was a good one. There's value in it. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's so much easier to do these days with all the social media. You're not always hunting for new customers. They're there. So don't neglect them just because it's a one-off.
You bring up a good point there. If it's a one-off, that's actually makes it more important to capture data on those people, because maybe you can help them or serve them down the road, or you make an alliance with somebody who can serve them, giving you more of a value add and the ability to be a value add to the person and to the business.
Yep.
It's awesome.
It pays hugely to look around at what other people are doing and don't invent the wheel. But see what they're doing and see if it works and copy it if you can. When I when we had Yellow Pages and I owned my hardware store, I was telling my brother this just yesterday. I had every year I get a notification that the Yellow Page guy was going to come in and get me to sign up for, you know, the thousands of dollars. And because they gave you a certain amount of time, what I do is I go down to the public library. And in the public library, I would pull out copies of the Yellow Pages from New York and from Los Angeles, because they're 5 years ahead of us. I'd see what they're doing, see how they advertise themselves. What are they putting forward as the thing that they're doing? I didn't invent any of it. I took the best from the best. That's how we do it.
Yeah, what is the quote? I don't think Steve Jobs said it before, but he gets it from someone else. Good artists create, great artists steal. Right? Yeah, I'm like, what you're doing is just taking the ideas that work and morphing it into your own. I like it.
Yeah.
Man,
this is.
I'm fascinated with this price psychology. I mean, it really does play a factor. So, guys, once you get this dialed in. I mean, I think that I learned the lesson the hard way recently. We only had one bullet in the gun. Here's how we can help you. And just to give you a little backstory, I used to write books in 30 days for people. I'd interview you, I'd write it. Now the quality can only be so good. So as time went on, I hired better writers. We needed more time. So I went away from that. My pricing went up. We got different target audience clientele. And it became a much better system, ultimately allowing me to hire more people. So you start somewhere and you grow and you mature and you develop. But, you know, you become more clear-minded and you become very, very decisive on who you want to work with as time goes on. And pricing, the more I morphed and made these adjustments, I noticed people responded differently. So it really matters, guys. Get it dialed in. Your life will never be the same.
There's out of your story, there are two things in there that I can relate to. Most people would have said, I need more work, so I'm going to discount. Right?
Yeah.
Because that's what we do.
I've done that in the past, you know, when you need it, you need it.
But you couldn't have afforded the people.
Right.
You couldn't have afforded to get better writers in there, et cetera. The other part of it is you made a decision at one point to move away from the actual writing into the selling where you're better at it.
Correct.
You know what you have to do? That's cool. You can talk the talk. You can walk it if you have to. But it's better to be a sales guy when you know what you're doing.
Love it, man.
Lots of techs out there. Lots of techs.
Guys, check out his book or books. Obviously, he has I think there's two of them on Amazon.
That's right.
Yeah. So check out his books on Amazon. The one is called Pricing Strategies for Small Business. Easy to find. And The Dark Art of Pricing. I got to check that book out because the one I came across first was Pricing Strategy. So The Dark Art of Pricing. I'm going to look that up. And is there a website or a social media channel that you recommend people to find you on?
I'm on LinkedIn. But as you may be able to tell from the color of my hair, I'm sliding out. Not sliding in. So I'm anxious to tell people as much as I possibly can, which we've been doing today. And I'm happy if they read the books, but I'm giving up on my consulting stuff. It's there's a limit to what I can do. My legacy will get bigger and better if I talk to more people like I'm doing with you.
Man, I think it'd be great to have you a part of our $1 million circle, maybe doing a presentation or something. So let's talk afterwards.
Be happy to. Because
I realize how important this is. And just a few nuggets that you gave me or gave us on this podcast really could change somebody's business. And the fact that you just outlined the strategy of presenting a price and then breaking it down and how important that is, giving people options, giving them control. I mean, it's going to open up a lot of doors and a lot of people will come to you because of that. So excellent. Thank you so much for being here. Andrew Gregson, guys, look him up online, get in touch with him on LinkedIn before it's too late. All right. He's not going to be doing social media. He sounds like that much longer. So you can pick up his book, get in touch with him as fast as possible. And give a review for his books. Obviously this is changing entrepreneurship.
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate this.
Thanks for being here, man. And remember, guys, a $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life right on.